Hello, and welcome to The Alt Left.
Welcome back, everyone, to The Alt Left. Thank you for joining us. This is our 14th episode. We are recording on March 6, 2021. Glad you're here. I'm your host, Chris, and with me, as always, is the good Reverend Dr. K.
Good evening, everyone.
And Matthew Jumbo Johnson.
Hello, and welcome back, everybody.
So today, pew, 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 we are going to talk about the only thing that's more American than apple pies, gun violence. Woo-hoo! Second Amendment.
Yay! Gun violence.
Yeehaw! If we're going to go into this, and this is whether we're covering a lot, because we're not going to talk about necessarily the plague of gun violence. I'm sure that's going to come up. But what we're actually going to discuss here is, is the Second Amendment and American gun ownership. Because gun control is kind of where the debate is. There is no debate on gun violence. It is rampant. It is everywhere. There's a wonderfully vibrant industry of kindergarten-sized coffins. We know this is a problem. The stats on that could be there on podcast, and they're unnecessary. Google's free, guys. What we're going to talk about, though, is the Second Amendment and the legality of gun control and whether or not it should be expanded, restricted, altered, what we should do.
I mean, yeah, I think pretty much anyone on either side of this argument isn't going to try and make the point that gun violence isn't a thing. I think we all can agree on that point.
The core of what we're talking about here, if we're going to talk about gun ownership and legality, is we got to go straight for the Second Amendment, right? Because that is the crux of American gun ownership. The Second Amendment, written in 1789, states specifically a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. And everyone agreed on that, and there was never a debate ever again, and it's been a happy day ever since.
Thank you for coming to the Alt Left. We'll see you next time.
See you next week. Okay, play that music out. Da, da, da. Obviously, it's never two sides to anything. Things are nuanced. Shades of gray exist. We know that. But typically, in the majority viewpoint, there's usually two sides, and I find them both equally correct and wrong. And first of all, something that doesn't get said enough in this country, and not only in school, but also in our media, is fuck the opinions in general of wealthy slave owners who have been dead almost 2.5 centuries.
Absolutely.
We put all this, what the founding fathers would have wanted. It's like, don't get me wrong. It's good to know this for historical context, but we do not need to be basing our current society off a bunch of slave-owning assholes who killed people because they didn't want to pay taxes. Let's not base a world on that, okay?
Agreed. And the thing about it, too, there is one thing absolutely that you should know that the Founding Fathers did want. And this is easily looked up. They wanted the Constitution to be a living document. The one thing they absolutely got right is they understood that as things happen, times change, people evolve, technologies evolved. So they wanted this document to be something that could be added to, amended, changed over time as the people changed. That is absolutely something they wanted. So anybody over here circle jerking over what the original intent of this document was is a fucking moron who doesn't know history or a liar.
And that's the funny thing is, I mean, the big proponent of that was Thomas Jefferson, right? You know, Jefferson was the one, you know, liberty of, there was the tree of liberty must be, you know, watered with the blood of tyrants and patriots. Like Thomas Jefferson, again, also a bastard, but was definitely one of the most radical free thinkers of them. And he wrote constantly that he wanted America to be in a constant state of revolution. He would love what modern day France is, you know, a country that regularly topples its own government and builds something better for the modern day. And we have an entire panel of judges who are supposed to interpret this thing. You know, we have all of this. And it's like, if you did 1 minute of it, the interpretation is that it should have been burned down and a new one written every generation. That's what they wanted. They did not want a 300-year-old document dictating our lives.
Yeah, which is why I think anybody that says they're a constitutionalist is a freaking moron.
Well, they're a constitutionalist. That's fine. But then we have to hold them into the same realm as someone who says they're a monarchist. You can say I don't ever want anything to change and I want static authoritarianism, but then understand that you don't want freedom, you want static authoritarianism.
Which is exactly why I call them morons, because it's the exact same people that talk about freedom and liberty and doing all these things and try to act as if a document written over 200 years ago is somehow perfect and the only thing we need to advance freedoms, when it was written during a time where slave ownership was okay and legal. Like, it's the most contradictory bullshit line of thinking I've ever heard of. And that's kind of why, like there's certain things that if people claim it, like, I will instantly just stop looking at them as a person and look at them as just a lump of dumb. Trumpers fall into this category. People that say, well, I'm a constitutionalist, I'll give you a little bit of a pass to ask a question or two. But every time I've done this, I've always ended up at the same place. They literally will try to make the argument that any amendment to the Constitution is bad and shouldn't be done.
Even though their favorite parts of the Constitution are the amendments.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And at that point, I'm pretty much like, I'm sorry. No, thank you. I'm out.
Yeah.
I'm out. No point in arguing with you further.
But we're here for one specific amendment. If we're going to have to go into the minds of these sons of bitches, like, the two narratives revolve around them, right? And we have a liberal and a conservative belief. Again, I'm paraphrasing a whole lot of people, but basically the American liberal belief is the founding fathers didn't want there to be any standing army, and that state militias will be entirely farmer minutemen, and that people just need a musket over the fireplace. They didn't need an AR-15 or multiple guns. That is, would you agree, is kind of your basic liberal talking point, right?
Yes. In fact, a go-to line, if you're a fan of Bill Maher, is his talking point of citing the first part of the amendment, making an argument to the effect of, we don't need militias, therefore you don't have a right to the guns that you think you do.
Yes. And that's the thing is the standing army thing is legit, right? But standing militias and state armories predate the Second Amendment. I mean, Washington used the federal militia to crush Shays' rebellion after they raided the state armory. And for those of you who don't know Shays' Rebellion, that's a whole different thing. It was basically states versus federal government. It's actually the thing that led to the Constitution. It's what ended the Articles of Confederation. Look it up. We can do a podcast on it sometime. I could talk for an hour about Shays' Rebellion. It's fucking fascinating, but that's not what we're here for. But one of the things that led to the Constitution was a federal militia already existed, and we had state militias and we had state armories, and there was already, before the Constitution or the Second Amendment even existed, there was already a infrastructure in place for a military. You know, beyond that, well, the founding fathers obviously didn't envision machine guns or AR-15s or M203 grenade launchers, right? They very intentionally didn't say muskets, cannons, kegs of powder, horses. No, they said arms. And that means the weapons of the day. Arms just mean current weapons. Those are arms. A sword is an arm, and a tank is an arm. At the time of the Constitution, muskets were the apex of military technology. So any liberal who says, like, well, they were thinking about muskets, not AR-15s, like, no, they were thinking about people having the best military equipment they could possibly get their hands on. And today, we already have regulation that very much exceeds civilians from getting military-grade equipment. Anything you can get your hands on, I don't care where, in the backwoods of Tennessee, is antiquated and pathetic and nerf compared to what the U.S. Marine Corps has. Now, that's the left. Now, the right-wing idea is just as half correct and half ridiculously flawed, right? So the right-wing idea is that the founders jerked off with gun oil and banged their wives while they were sniffing gunpowder, right?
Yep.
And they wanted every and only white conservative men to defend the nation against the evil, bad government. So, okay, first of all, the founding fathers were the government. They were not looking to incite rebellion against themselves. Again, look up Shays' Rebellion. We have a constitution and a Bill of Rights because they didn't want rebellions. And they were against this. They were against the king, not against them losing power. Okay. Also, the founding fathers wanted militias to be private armies of wealthy landowners. This idea of, like, the Oath Keepers waving flags and being concerned citizens, that's not what they wanted at all. These basic redneck Cletus motherfuckers would have no respect or civil rights in the kind of nation the founders built. You conservatives, who, if any of you are listening, were like a labor force and a force to die for the defense of their private property and nothing more. You would have no right to vote and no legal protections because you were not wealthy or landowning. Yeah. You were meant to be cannon fodder. It was supposed to be a modern violent serfdom.
You'd be the farmhands that were just happy that you weren't the slaves.
Exactly. So this noble militia idea is just so flawed. And again, a lot of times when you ask for contemporary Xandals, right, they tend to worship films like Red Dawn. Where good old American boys defend the nation from commies, right? It was Russia and Cuba invade because, and their Second Amendment guns are what keep everyone safe. Well, first of all, the movie actually shows that they establish a small, decently effective terrorist cell while the actual military fights off the invaders. The whole movie, they're getting radio reports from the U.S. Army that is fighting off the Soviets. They are not doing that. They're doing hit and run, blowing up bridges, taking out supply depots, right? And secondly, it's no different than what the French did during Nazi occupation. The Polish post office and Girl Scouts did this. And guess what? The French and Polish didn't have an armed society. They just stole German rifles. Right?
Because there was a lot of them available at the time.
And it worked fucking great. They didn't need their own. They didn't need to crack open Grandpa's armory. They just picked up the rifles of the guy they threw a rock at and then shot him and then took the rifle. And poof, now you've got an armed resistance agent. That's what it was. And it worked, again, it worked perfectly. And it, like, I'm sorry, if the best defense of your political ideology is a shitty 80s Jennifer Grey movie, just stop voting. Just please, just stop voting. The idea of fighting the military with a gun is a weird white nationalist trope, and it's not what was ever meant to be. So that's the history. And before I hop onto my soapbox about how I feel about it, what about the other areas of the left? Matt, what do you think about this?
So I'm glad you asked me first. So my take on this is probably going to be much closer to the more liberal side. Let me start off explaining why, and then I'll get into it. So, like I kind of mentioned on the last episode, what I try to do with these issues is I try to look at what the goal is. All right. Now, full disclosure here, I have shot rifles, shotguns, and small arms here and there, at rifle ranges and things like that. I am not a gun owner. I've never been into gun culture. It doesn't mean I think nobody should own a gun. It just means it's not something I'm into. So I really don't have a dog in the fight on this one, so to speak. So what I do is I look at what is my goal? What do I want accomplished? I want no more Sandy Hooks. I want less people dying from gun violence. I want less children dying from gun violence. I want whatever works to solve those problems. That's what I want. Now, when I say I'm on the more liberal side of this, the reason being is I used to be, this is years ago before I met Chris and he started pulling me further left, but I used to be a big fan of Bill Maher. I'm not anymore because I think he's kind of out there and is not much better than a Republican at this point. But I kind of, like I said earlier, fell into that line of thinking, this idea that, well, we should just start banning these guns because if they can't get the guns, then obviously these things will stop. And that's kind of been my take. From a certain point of view, I can see the logic behind it. I think there are other countries that have done this as well. Australia, I think, is the main one people go to, but I think Britain and other European countries have done similar things. And so I'm like, okay, well, why can't we do that? Ironically, from Bill Maher himself, he hit on a point that kind of made me realize I don't think it's going to happen. And it's that there is a culture of gun love in this country that is so pervasive that there is probably little to no chance that we are ever going to be able to get that kind of legislation out. And what I mean by that is that it isn't just the right that is obsessed with guns. It's the left too. Now, the left, I think, tends to do it for different reasons. A lot of them are just so freaking scared that a bunch of right-wingers are going to bust down their door and start, murdering any minority family members they have that they want to protect themselves. But they still do it, and they learn how to do it, and they get kind of involved in this own, not the kind of culture that I think Chris is going to talk about, but this weird, like, liberal gun culture of like, well, I've got to have a gun because everyone else has a gun. And I don't think you're going to be able to get any kind of, ban across with a culture that is this intense. But then I heard something from Chris, which was a take that I'd never heard before. And that's one of the reasons I was really excited to do this episode. I'm going to let Chris go over his take, but I think he makes a lot of good points. And it is the only argument I have heard that I think comes from a place of logic and reason, but is also the perfect middle ground to solve and get to the solutions that I'm looking for. I'll let Chris talk about that. For me, I think if we have to accept the fact that guns are just going to be part of our culture, then the goal should be whatever steps can be taken that are common sense, don't infringe on anyone's rights, but still accomplish the goals that I've listed. Again, less gun deaths overall, less children dying, you know, no more school shootings. Like, we've got to find a way to take care of this. And again, if this involves going just beyond gun control and getting into funding better mental health services, I'm for it. That's part of this argument that I hear tossed from the right all the time. Well, this isn't a gun issue. This is a mental health issue. And then the right turns around and blocks every step to increase access to mental health services that is pitched by the left. So it's, it comes to this point where, once again, I find this right-wing argument to be incredibly hypocritical. And usually it doesn't hold water, because they will say what you're saying isn't the problem. This is the real problem. And then when you pose a solution to that problem, they say, no, we can't do that. And the right pretty much rejects any solution to a problem other than do nothing. And that's where I kind of fall on this line. I also agree that I think the liberal take has just become far too out there. I don't think banning weapons is going to solve anything, because, you know, you've already got arsenals. I think we've got like something like 3 guns per person in this country already. Like, they're already out there. The ban isn't going to just get rid of them.
I can actually give you some of those statistics.
Handle it.
So worldwide, there are 857 million civilian owned guns. Here in the United States, we account for almost half of that. So here in the United States, we have 393 million guns that are owned by civilians. All right. We have 328.2 million people here in the United States. That includes newborns all the way through the elderly. So literally everyone.
So I was a little off on that then. That means it's not 3-1, but it's like at least enough for one gun for every man, woman, and child in this country.
It's actually 1.2 guns per man, woman, and child. All right. So there are, per the statistics, 72 million citizens who own guns. What is that? About a third, a quarter of people in the United States own guns. That means that there are 5.5 guns per citizen gun owner. So if you own a gun, the statistics say that you are likely to have 5.5 guns. So Chris, you're a gun owner. How many guns do you have?
3 shotguns, right?
Uh-huh.
I have 3 rifles.
Uh-huh.
And I have 2 pistols, so 8. I have 8.
So 8. Okay. You're a little bit above what we would consider the average.
Oh yeah, if you go far enough left, you get your guns back.
Yeah. And that's fine. I don't have a problem with people owning guns. I've never had a problem with people owning guns.
Yeah.
I have a problem with people owning hundreds of guns, because 5.5 guns per technical owner is not the average of actual gun ownership. People that have guns typically either have 1 or 2, or
30.
Yeah, or they have 30 or more guns. So for you to have slightly more than what we would call mathematical average is by far not normal. Okay. So Matt was talking about a little bit earlier that there are countries like the UK and Australia specifically that have banned some sort of gun ownership. In the UK, right, they've only actually had 4 mass shooting events. Okay, there were 3 that happened before 1996, specifically 1987, 1989, 1996. And then they've had 1 additional one that was like 2010 or 2011. In 1997, the UK enacted 2 different firearms amendments, and those firearms amendments essentially stopped handgun ownership or assault rifle ownership. That's the broad scope of them. For Australia, in 1996, there was the Port Arthur massacre. Later that year in 1996, they had the National Firearms Agreement, and what that did was it mandated a buyback for any non-sporting rifle. If it was not a specific hunting rifle, you had to turn it back over to the government, and they paid you a marked value for whatever that gun was. Those were two things that were started off by massacre that here in the United States happen multiple times a year, to the tune of, in 1980, we had approximately 22 mass shootings. In the 1980s, we had approximately 22 mass shootings. From 1991 to 1999, we had approximately 30. In the 2000s, so 2000 all the way up to present, and I realize this is a 20-year span versus the other two 10-year spans, we've had 168 events. 168 mass shootings. This is a gun problem. We deify guns in this country. We almost worship them to a point where it's some of the most fervent thoughts that they can have about guns. They have polarized this country. Either you're a gun owner or you're not a gun owner. The gun owners really like owning their guns. The people that aren't gun owners, by and large, almost don't care, except that they want more regulation. And here in the United States, there's a couple of things that stop greater regulation, even though, according to a Pew Research study, 60% of Americans want greater gun control laws. It's crazy to me that we don't have more gun control laws in this country. It's crazy to me that we have not decided that in the last 20 years, more than 1,100 people dying from mass shootings is not enough.
So, Kay, you bring up a damn good point, and that is that regardless of where you stand on the issue, gun violence numbers are ridiculous, right?
Yeah, they are.
They're just pro-gun, anti-gun. It doesn't matter. This is a big fucking problem, and
Absolutely.
The death and carnage is insane, especially when we're taking things like, I mean, some of these mass shootings are things like school shootings and just people shooting up concerts, you know? But my question to you is, and again, not to bring the trope of it's not guns, but look at our neighbors. To the north of us, Canadians have far more lax gun laws. You can get automatic weapons in Canada. They do not have this violent streak. To the south of us, northern Mexico has no firearms permitted. Firearms and ammunition are completely regulated and illegal for any citizen to own. Correct. And their violence is far beyond anything we have. So doesn't this, I mean, I almost wonder, like, is this even a thing that numbers can even help us with? Because it seems to be culturally an American problem. Other nations don't tend to suffer from this issue of trying to kill each other. And I almost wonder that, again, this sounds like a tired cliche, but I absolutely believe that if we took all weapons away, Americans would murder each other in the millions with grapefruit spoons.
Well, and I think you got a point there. I think kind of, you know, one of the things I also wanted to point out is the things Kay mentioned are very common talking points for the left, the liberal side of this argument as well.
And they're accurate. Like, I'll give it to them.
Yeah, I mean, they will absolutely, they'll point to Australia and say, look, they had one incident, or the UK had a handful of incidents, and they were like, this needs to stop, we need to do something, and they took action. Now, the right side of this will typically say something like, yeah, but look at knife deaths, and they've gone up since they've removed guns. And while that is absolutely a true statement, you're not going to get mass killings with knives. Like, the moment that somebody can take a knife and kill like 82 people in less than a minute, then I'll start having that conversation with you.
Agreed. I absolutely agree with that statement.
Yeah, that's the inherent flaw in that argument. And again, I'm not saying it needs to be that we've banned guns, because like Chris just said, our neighbors to the south, Mexico, have that in place already, and it doesn't, it hasn't curtailed their violence streak. But it isn't just a matter of enacting laws, I think, to ban guns or gun control or any kind of gun regulation. It goes hand in hand with other things. That's why these issues are so much bigger and more nuanced than just boiling them down to, you know, banning guns or not banning guns. There's so many different factors in play. And it's like I said, there is a cultural problem in this country with the way we view guns and arms, the way we view gun violence, the way we try to approach gun violence. We have mental health crises in these countries. We have, as we discussed on the last episode, there's a severe opioid epidemic going on in this country right now, and that's factoring into this as well. You know, poverty is growing rapidly in this country. The growing income inequality is driving more and more people into the poorhouse, while the richest in this country keep getting richer. All of these things are contributing factors to these issues. And I'm not suggesting by any means that, you know, solving one of these problems is going to solve all of them, but we need to start taking action on all of them. And we can't, because right, wrong, or indifferent, the left in this country is trying to get things done. Successfully, unsuccessfully, right or wrong, they're at least attempting something. While the right, in my opinion, is constantly roadblocking every attempt to get things done. And I think that's part of this cultural problem, is there is one side of this argument that says, there is a problem here, I want a solution. And rather than coming to the table and helping figure out that solution, the other side is just saying, there's no problem.
I agree with you, actually. I agree that we have a mental health issue problem. We have a problem with how we view things in this country. And I think that that leaks its way into anything and everything that can be diametrically opposed in this country. It just, to me, says, okay, well, how do we deal with it? We can't just ban guns, because just banning guns isn't necessarily the solution. We can't just look at the mental health issue, because it's only a mental health issue. What we really have is gun advocate groups like the NRA are actually advocates for the gun manufacturers, not for gun owners, first of all. Secondly, we have a problem with it being a liberal or a conservative issue. It's not a liberal or a conservative issue. It's an American problem. Canada, specifically, since Chris asked about that, in 1989, there was the Montreal Massacre that resulted in 5 years later, Canada passing a 1994 Firearms Act, where they harshly constricted the availability of guns as well. But they don't have the same kind of laws that we do in general. Northern Mexico, as far as my own understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, Northern Mexico tends to have a crime problem in general. I think that their gun laws go along with...
Well, the thing is, by saying it's a crime problem in general, America has a crime problem in general.
Absolutely. I don't disagree with...
But their gun laws make owning firearms illegal. They've banned guns and ammunition. And I'm just saying that destroys the correlation that gun ownership equals gun violence. I'm saying the issue has got to be cultural.
Oh, no. Not... Gun ownership is not the issue. Legal gun ownership, right? Because it's illegal to own a gun, right? In Mexico. Federal law says it is illegal to own a gun. Okay.
Yeah, Northern Mexico is just where it's really, really violent because of us.
Sure. But they don't have a problem with legal gun ownership. They have a problem with illegal gun ownership.
Well, yeah, but who doesn't? You know?
Well, no, we all do. And that's also part of the problem, is taking away guns from the legal owners doesn't help the illegal guns, you know, doesn't do anything to combat the illegal gun owners.
Yeah, whether you're talking about guns or drugs or alcohol, prohibition doesn't work.
No, it doesn't. So there's a lot of people that will also make an argument, you know, okay, so there's 3,000, in 2019, there was 39,767 gun-related deaths here in the United States. There are typically conservative gun owners or advocates will make the argument that 60% of those 39,767 deaths were from suicide, okay? And that 37% of that number was from homicide. And then the other 3% is from undetermined reasons, right? Well, let's look at non-lethal gun injuries here in the United States. So for 2019, there was 71,000 non-lethal gun injuries. 50% of those were assault. 36.5% were unintentional gun injuries. 3.6% of those were suicide. And then 7.1 is undetermined. And then 2.4 is legal intervention. Okay.
Do we have an accident number on that one as well? Because I know there's also a big chunk that are literally people blowing
their unintentional.
Oh, okay. Got it.
Unintentional. 36.7%. Okay. So altogether, we have 110,000 gun-related injuries. When you put those numbers together, it's not 60%. It's 25% of all gun-related injuries are from suicide.
Now, question on that though. If we combine the suicide with if we combine the suicide with accidental, what number do we get?
Well, see, the thing is that suicide isn't accidental.
I'm not suggesting they are the same. I'm just asking, what is that number if we combine
them? I think what Chris is trying to do is separate everything out else out to see what percentage is just bulk.
What percentage is self-inflicted is what I'm asking. And so I want to add what's the accidental plus the suicide?
Okay, so the thing is that they don't differentiate the unintentional from
self-inflicted
or otherwise.
Yeah, that's fair. Okay. And fair enough. And I was curious because I think a lot of people conflate the numbers of suicide versus accidental discharge.
Well, and that's exactly what I was getting at, is that this idea that 60% of all gun related deaths is, well, fuck, no shit.
Yeah.
People don't point guns at their fucking head, you know, and not try to kill themselves. If somebody points a gun at their head and pulls the fucking trigger, they're looking to die. Now, I think it's tragic.
An excellent deer hunter cosplay.
Yes, absolutely. But my point is only 3.6% of suicidal attempts by gun end in not being lethal. You know, it's less than 25% of the total injuries are by suicide.
Yeah.
So when somebody uses that kind of statistic, they're misleading you.
Yeah.
Because they're not giving you all of the information that's available on those kind of statistics.
It's the Ben Shapiro style of debate. It's the you take one little nugget of truth out of context, put that out there as if it represents like some big damning point against the libs. When really, when you take it all in context, you realize they're full of shit.
Well, and okay, yeah. something about these numbers, right? Now, everything Kay just said is correct. I stand by them. And I think he brings up a hell of a good point about a lot of this is violence more than the gun industry wants to talk about, right?
That's exactly what I'm getting at.
Yeah, it's violence. And again, that's fair. I have no argument against it, nor am I trying to. It is tragic. It is wrong. But when we break it down by these numbers, right, it almost kind of reminds me of the birth control debate, right? When women talk about needing birth control, right? And they're like, oh, well, it's my acne and it's my medication for my blood pressure. It helps with my periods and it does this and it does this. And it's like, yeah, that's great, but it doesn't matter because that's a losing argument. The point for birth control is that you're allowed to decide when or not you breed. To ignore that and to say, look, I need it because I need to regulate my body is a valid reason. Don't get me wrong. Needing orthotricycline or any other hormone or chemical for any reason, if it benefits your life, whether it's through birth control or through body regulation, doesn't matter. You have a right to it. It's your body. It's your medication. 100%. But I don't like the back down on that one because the conservatives aren't saying we don't want women to regulate their periods. It's an anti-choice argument, and we need to attack it as such. And it's the same when we talk about gun numbers like this. And again, I am not discrediting any of that. That's legit. But that's not the reason, whether it's violent or not, or whether it's kind of like when people who defend, like the NRA will, right? They'll defend these numbers and say, yes, but we need them for home defense and we need them for hunting. It's a disingenuous argument. The real reason we have firearms is to defend ourselves at the community level. That's where...
Well, and because we like guns.
Don't get me wrong. There is an absolute... Again, like I said, the idea of fighting the U.S. Army with guns is this weird... Little dick energy, white nationalist.
It absolutely is.
Can we just take a quick moment to address that? Like, if
I would like to avoid that, because just like it's a misdirection, because that is a tiny minority of people who get the big. It's like fucking Dennis Prager. Right. Goes out there and does this ridiculous InfoWars bullshit, and conservatives get labeled as him. And that's garbage. He's an extremist, and we need to mark him as a dangerous extremist. But that's what he is. He doesn't represent a mean. And these camouflage, you know, fucking Bagel Team 6 guys out there, these fat middle aged dudes living out some fucking G.I. Joe fantasy, are not the majority of people, nor are they the spirit of what that is for. You know, this idea is put out there by, it's Oath Keepers and Doomsday Nutjobs and privileged white liberals who love pushing this narrative that represents a tiny fraction that is not statistically significant. So the actual left has guns to defend against government tyranny, but not the military. Okay. I'm not worried about the U.S. Marine Corps landing a helicopter on my house and coming for me. Because let me tell you, if the NSA wants to take me out, I'm done. No revolver is going to save me from that. Okay.
Yeah. No AR-15, yeah. No shotgun, no nothing is going to keep that being, you know, that from happening.
Well, and that's what I wanted to point out, though. That's what I meant by addressing it, is pointing out the lunacy of that statement.
Yeah. It's an idiotic argument, but we need to also address that is not most gun owners, right? Most gun owners are people who want protection in their own homes from home invasion. That's a majority of gun owners. But even beyond that, there's a vital part that we don't talk about in America, and it's that guns were vital to the civil rights movement. Guns were vital to ending slavery and in revolts. Charles Cobbs, a historian, got this great quote from him. He wrote this amazing book called This Nonviolent Stuff Will Get You Killed. Highly recommend reading it. And his quote is, the tradition of armed self-defense in Afro-American history cannot be disconnected from the success of what today is called the nonviolent civil rights movement. There is something many people either forget or never learn. Guns protected the black people who were marching for freedom. If not for the threat of gunfire, many more peaceful protests and possibly the movement itself would have been silenced by violence. And that's accurate. The civil rights movement was armed. We learn in history that Martin Luther King Jr. rose from a cabbage, was blessed by Jesus, removed his genitals, was kissed by an angel, and walked down the street hugging police officers. And that's not what fucking happened at all. He was an angry socialist who was surrounded by armed men, who was defended partially by the Muslim Brotherhood, and fought cops. Okay? He advocated for nonviolence. He was like, we're not going to take swings. He had no problem with others doing it. He defended mobs and violence. He said nothing will outrank this violence that's being done upon us. MLK is sold to us as this happy Hindu cow who had no problems with anything, and it's bullshit. The man simply was like, look, I don't want more people to die, and that's valid. He was definitely the most peaceful of most of the black icons we have from this era. Again, he was protected by guns, and the only reason he lived as long as he did was because he, the most peaceful leader we had at the time, was protected by guns.
And that was out of necessity.
And he owned guns, by the way. MLK had a house filled with guns. W.E.B. Du Bois, another one, right? He's got this quote, and he wrote it after the 1906 Atlanta massacre. He said, if a white mob had stepped onto the campus where I lived, I would have, without hesitation, have sprayed their guts all over the grass. That's W.E.B. Du Bois. Again, another person we claim was kissed by a pacifist angel and walked around begging politely for civil rights. Bullshit.
Well, and let's also remember, too, Malcolm X also existed. One of the main reasons Martin Luther King was so successful is because Malcolm X scared the shit out of white people of what he might do if they didn't fucking listen to Dr. King. Like, that's the other thing that people don't want to talk. That's why Malcolm X gets buried. He is just as significant when talking about the civil rights movement, and no history class will teach about him because he was violent, and that violence had a purpose and it worked because people were given two choices. You could either not listen and Malcolm X and his crew were going to fucking make sure you did with violence, or you could turn to peaceful Dr. King and listen to what he said. Yeah. And even then it still didn't work because look what happened to Dr. King. They fucking killed him. Like, everyone acts as if he was this big martyr that died for peace. He died because white people didn't like that he was telling them to treat black people as humans. Like,
remember, Malcolm X is the one who said, "We will achieve liberation by any means necessary." He did not denounce peaceful protest, but he had no problem that if the white moderate or the police wanted to turn against him, he and his men were very well armed and constantly battled, right? This was, violence was thrust upon them at all times by the state. And the only thing that kept these civil rights leaders alive was their guns, right? I mean, look at Kevin Carson had this great, another great quote. He's like, "Regardless of the liberal or progressive rhetoric used to defend gun control, you can safely bet it will come down harder on the cottagers than the gentry, harder on the workers than the Pinkertons, and harder on the Black Panthers than on murdering cops." And that's what it comes down to. It's always turned around. Black Panthers open carried legally. And the reason they lived as long as they did was because they returned fire and shot the cops who were shooting them and were trying to kill them. There was an FBI and LAPD assassination squad. The documents are at the end. Google this, kids. This is real. The LAPD went on a murdering spree of the Black Panthers. This is how they had to survive. Anybody remember Tamir Rice?
Yep.
Because the people who are actually causing massive gun violence are the police, not the citizenry. Tamir Rice, 2014, 12-year-old with a toy gun. He was playing. He was murdered by a pig named Timothy Lohman. So a 911 call goes in. Twice the caller says the gun appears fake. This is a kid with a gun in the park, and I think it's fake, right? Twice he says that. Once the police report came out, the time when the squad car arrived and the cop shouted to show his hands, and then he murdered a child who did not point the gun at him, is 2 seconds. 2 seconds. A child is supposed to react to a cop screaming at him at gunpoint in 2 seconds to not get shot. The police officers union issued a statement that basically supported the shooting. It said, "Something positive must come from this tragic loss. That would be educating youth of the dangers of possessing a real or replica firearm." Yeah, they placed the blame on the child who wasn't threatening anyone, not a cowardly pig who murdered a child in a park in broad daylight in 2 seconds.
Yep, okay? Victim blaming.
Yeah,
I'm good at that.
Police bombing of the compound. There was a black liberation group called MOVE in Philadelphia in the 80s. And it's, again, this is another one you can look up. It's a well-known history piece. They dropped a bomb on it from a helicopter in 1985, killed 11 people and 5 children, and burned down most of the block. The cops dropped a bomb from a helicopter because they didn't like black people passing out food or talking about social liberation. I mean, recently we got Breonna Taylor. Cops break into a house violently with a no-knock warrant after they've already got the guy they wanted. All witness accounts from the building are the cops did not identify themselves. They just broke the door down and rushed in armed. And then Breonna's boyfriend used his legally registered handgun to do what we are all told is the purest form of gun ownership, to defend yourself and your family from armed intruders. But these thugs broke in unannounced, and when a man defends his home legally, they shoot him and also murder his fiance who's sleeping in bed. And they're only charged with the bullets that missed and damaged the property of the white neighbors. Where was the NRA? Silent. Every time a black gun owner is killed.
It's because the NRA is not a citizen advocate group.
And it's not even a colorless advocate group. The NRA could be amazing. It could be an organization that's dedicated to safety, training, education, but it's just a racist lobbying firm for the gun manufacturing industry.
Yeah, they don't give a fuck about the people.
Yeah.
All they give a fuck about is selling more guns.
But no matter where you look through civil rights in the United States, there's no time we don't find the police systematically murdering leftists and people of color. All the time. The gun problem is cops having them, not civilians.
Yeah, look at, absolutely.
Look at the union organizations of the turn of the 20th century, 1910, 1920. All you have are the police shooting, stabbing, and beating union leaders at any time there's any kind of strike. So I hear about violence, and it's like, don't get me wrong, these numbers are scary, but what's the population of the United States? And how much of this would be resolved if we didn't have a war on drugs that was keeping people in a position where they had to use guns in order to eat or to secure housing?
And also keep in mind, remember too, whenever these people are shot, what's the go-to response from not just police and the media? Oh, they were drug dealers. They were
that
drug dealers.
Thug had a parking ticket once.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, parking tickets are something, but like, it's usually somehow tied to drugs. Like, that is their go-to thing, is that this person somehow, some way had a history with drugs, whether it be drug dealing, drug use. And if you tie this right back to the last episode we just did, you realize all these dots start to connect. And it's this circle of just constant oppression and manipulation and murder using drugs and, as we've just discussed, gun control. And that's actually what I wanted to circle back to, because the thing that changed my mind, as I was mentioning earlier, the discussion I was having with Chris, I think this was like 2 or 3 years ago now, was literally about this. And one of the things he had told me I was not aware of is that gun control actually started, I believe, during the civil rights movement, because white people saw that black people were arming themselves.
It depends on what you mean by gun control, because the first gun control we see is after the Civil War. They immediately went to ban any black people, and literally they were called freedmen laws, laws stopping freed slaves from arming themselves. But yes, what we would consider modern gun control laws, like limiting clips, limiting whether or not you could open carry, concealed weapons, that kind of thing, magazine sizes, came apart after the civil rights movement and during, and because of things. Again, California is an open carry state, right? Los Angeles County was also open carry. So was the Bay Area. And then all of a sudden, black people started shooting back at the cops and said, no, we're not going to be murdered in the streets. And I was like, oh, we got to stop these guns. Stop them. Don't let them have guns. I mean, it's not a racial thing. And it's like, well, yeah, because white people aren't being systematically executed by the police. And that is why I refuse to accept most gun control reforms, because it's hard to separate gun control from racism. Because just like that quote I said earlier, that Kevin Carson quote, always, where he says, you know, regardless of the liberal or progressive rhetoric used to defend gun control, you can safely bet it will come down harder on the cottagers and the gentry, right? Harder on the Black Panthers than on the cops. And it will always be that way. Gun control laws will be used by law enforcement. Gun control laws will always be used to go after women of color. And they will always be ignored. I mean, we got white people. Now I can't remember the guy's name, the jogger. Ahmaud Arbery, who was jogging by and checked out a house, and then some bunch of fucking rednecks showed up in a truck and gunned him down. Can you imagine if a white guy had been jogging through a neighborhood and a couple of black guys rolled up in an El Camino, said, what are you doing around here? And then gunned him down when he said, fuck you, and ran away. We had one guy a couple years ago, undocumented immigrant, shot a white lady. And it was on the news for a week straight. And it was going to inform all we were doing about immigration and blah, blah, blah. When white people do it, it's fine. No amount of gun control is going to stop white people from killing people of color. But every time it's implemented, it makes people of color far more defenseless against the police. So no, I actually don't want gun reform in terms of limiting guns. What I want, if we're going to reform gun laws, is we need to arm poor people. We need to arm communities of color, teach them safety, teach them basic protocol, find something. But when I say we, I don't mean the government. I want community-led defense. I want communities to defend themselves. That's the militias I want to see. I want to see armed neighborhood watch. And then I want to see the cops go through and over-police that fucking neighborhood. Then I'll start caring about how they feel safe, their lives are in danger. But as long as they're murdering 12-year-olds in a park in 2 seconds, and it's every time, this isn't an isolated incident. It's what we see constantly, every day on the news. It's just constantly. Cops get, I was afraid for my life. If you're that much of a coward that you have to gun down unarmed children, you shouldn't be a cop. It's that simple. You shouldn't have the job. If you're afraid of fire, don't be a fireman. If you can't drive a car, don't be a limo driver, right? If you're afraid of heights, maybe you shouldn't be an airplane pilot. And if you're too much of a fucking two-fisted coward to not murder children in the street because you're a racist piece of shit, you shouldn't be a cop. Now, unfortunately, that's going to lead to us having no cops, but that's the deal. If you can't swing a hammer, don't be a construction worker. But we don't have that. We praise cops as heroes. We let them have laissez-faire. We give them qualified immunity. I mean, can you even imagine that, Kay? Can you imagine walking into your job and just being and clocking in, and then you're going to go murder your boss and be like, hey, I was on the clock. I have qualified immunity. this needs to go to a grand jury before I can even have, be arrested or anything. I know I get protection. It's bullshit. So yeah, we have a major gun control problem. We shouldn't have an armed police force in this country, because the only group of people I have found who are the most careless and reckless with violence is the police, not the citizens.
Absolutely. Now,
and it's white people.
In Britain, the cops don't carry guns.
No, well, the patrol cops.
That's not all.
Yeah, there's Scotland Yard and the response teams. But yeah, that's how it should
be.
But
so what? But that's what I'm talking about is yeah, there are guns. Like, they have handguns. It's not like, you know, a bunch of guys walking around with rocks and shit. But the average beat cop doesn't carry a fucking gun because there's no reason for it.
But they also don't have a system where they incarcerate people for fun.
Absolutely. I agree. You know, they have a different way of looking at guns than we do here in the United States. Our viewpoint on guns is so fucking skewed that we have to go to these extreme measures in terms of having ideas like arm the fucking citizenry, that we have to have these kinds of ideas. Otherwise, only the people that are willing to kill will have them.
Well, and one more thing too, and I want to, this is going to be a little bit out there, but kind of ties to a common response I get when I'm talking about these issues. Start doing what Chris is advocating for. Start arming minority communities and watch. If we ever get to a point where we can do that, I guarantee you all the white right-wingers that are constantly saying no gun control are suddenly going to change their tune. I bet money on it. Because racism is a component to this, and it doesn't just go with the cops. It goes beyond that. As we've mentioned before, there is a problem with systemic racism in this country, and there's a problem with cultural racism in this country. It's not just inherent in the system. It's inherent in our culture. As Chris has said many times, we've never fully recovered from the Civil War. And for many reasons. Chris said because we didn't stomp out that racist bullshit right then and there. That's probably one of them. There's probably other reasons as well. I'm not going to get too deep into it. But when white people see armed and organized minorities, they shit themselves. Whether they're right or left, it doesn't matter.
Yep.
And I guarantee you, all the people that are anti-regulation will change their tune the moment they start saying that. And I think that's kind of like ties into the point Chris was making. One thing I wanted to also tie back to, too, is what do you think about this notion? I want to pitch it to both of you guys because it sounds good to me, but I think you guys might have different takes because as many of our audience probably figure out at this point, Chris and Kay are a little bit more knowledgeable on this topic than I am. So my question to you guys is this. What do you think about the idea of treating gun ownership the way we treat car ownership?
that was my theory a couple of years ago.
Oh, okay.
Where I talked about, it was an idea. Now, here's the thing. I have a big problem with implementation. But yeah, the long and the short of it is that no one's better at assessing risk than private insurance companies. And what if you forced liability insurance on gun ownership? It's a nice idea, but now you're talking about placing a civil right with buying insurance. I mean, again, whether or not you like the Second Amendment, it's a civil right. It's part of the Constitution. That would be like saying, well, you have to have liability insurance to go vote now. That's the problem, is you're now putting a paywall between a citizen and their civil rights.
So things like, licensing, regular testing, regular psych evaluations, you're not into that?
I like it. But again, all things being equal, it's a fantastic idea. But we don't live in an equal society, do we? We live in a society where a rich woman goes out of her way, spends an absolute fortune to get her daughter into a private college, and she gets a slap on the wrist, and a mother who lies to get their child bust into a better public school where they won't be in danger goes to prison for years.
Wait, I thought they got that sentence commuted.
They might have now. I haven't followed up on it since, but I mean, that's
what
she was sentenced
to. It doesn't
matter
whether they got it commuted or not. The point is she was convicted of it, and it's fucking awful.
Amen.
True. Yeah, you're right. You're right. The point is,
but that's the society we live in. And so until that part changes, I will not be in favor of a paywall because we're talking about the most impacted communities here. Yeah. Again, that is an awesome end goal. I like the idea of that. And again, only because not even that we need to have it, but like, again, I would like those algorithms of the risk because, again, it would stop mostly white oath keepers from having guns. Because that's the thing is you don't see a couple of random Latinx guys walking in and committing mass shootings all over the place. It's always the same. It's always some fucking messed up, disgruntled white dude who's really upset that when he used to have control of 99% of society, now it's 98.3, and that's upsetting, and minorities are taking over my life, and he used to go murder people. Or it's some fucked up vet, or, you know, list them, but none of them are ever poor people of color. And those are the people that we're talking about. This is where I want the working class to have class consciousness and to have community defense. And that is community defense against the wealthy and against the police, because that's who's terrorizing them. And as soon as people are safe and can flourish, you're going to see crime drop.
That's an interesting thing, you know, of who commits the majority of mass shootings in the United States. So since 1982 to 2020, 65 of these mass shootings were committed by white people, 21 by black, 10 by Latino, 8 by Asian, 5 by quote unquote other, 6 by unknown or unclear, and then 3 by Native Americans. Now, I wonder why.
I knew Native Americans were behind the gun problem.
It's absolutely not true at all.
I'm for it. Well, I want AIM to become a militia organization. Take back the land. Do it.
But my point is that other ethnicity groups are not the ones killing people. Yeah. It's also what is the average serial killer look like?
Ted
White
Bundy.
Male? No. White male, 35 years old.
Yeah, Ted
and
Bundy.
His neighbors all saw him as a quiet guy who kept to himself.
Yeah. But was very nice and polite.
God, look at the Golden State Killer. No one had any idea. He was just this old man living his life. And meanwhile, he's like, oh, he'd been raping up and down the state for decades.
But I bring it up only to say that the majority of really fucked up people in this country are middle-aged white men.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which we all three happen to be part of that demographic. What's the difference?
The question that I have then is this. So I think you all raise really good points. In your guys' minds, what do these proposals you have lead to a solution to mass shootings? Because I'm in favor of arming minority communities, but how does that then get us to stopping? Like, how do we solve the problem of, you know, crazy white people? Like, I guess that's really the question then is there gun control involved in this, or is it strictly a teaching, education, and, you know, mental health issue that we got to focus
on? I mean, we have a vast federal system that looks into people and tracks them down. It's just never used against white people. Not a fan of the Huffington Post, because talk about a piece of liberal cotton. But the Huffington Post has actually been doing this amazing expose of the people who've been tracking down the DC rioters. And it's been the citizens. People at home,
by and large.
Yeah, people at home. And they've been submitting their tips. And like, we found him. Here's his address. Here's his name. Here's everything. And the FBI has been sitting on it. And the Justice Department sits on it. And it wasn't until the Huff Post started posting that, like, how come there's thousands of tips and most of them are credible and the FBI hasn't even opened the emails or hasn't responded? And then all of a sudden, the FBI started reaching out to people and giving a shit. But we have a vast network of domestic intelligence that, again, I'm not a big fan of. I am not rooting for the FBI. It's actually funny. When this came out, it's like I'm looking at all my liberal friends like, oh, you done rooting for the FBI now? The FBI are not the good guys.
No, they're not the good guys. They never have it.
Yeah, but we have this insane ability to track these people down, but we don't care. We just don't care. You know, it's like a guy bombed a busy street on Christmas morning and everyone was like, oh my God. And they're like, oh, it was a white guy. And it was like, done. It's off the news. Nobody gives a shit. Who cares? That's the world we live in. You know, we get half a passport and a pubic hair and we can track it down to a cave in Afghanistan. But if it's a domestic terrorist who's white, we don't have the resources or the time. You know, how many police departments around the country have entire basements filled with rape kits they refuse to test because white guys did.
There's not enough money. There's not enough time. There's not enough resources.
Exactly. That's the thing. So it's like we have the resources to do this. We lack the will. So the answer is not gun control. The answer is not any kind of legislation. The answer is to tear apart our ridiculous justice system and actually build something that resembles that word.
Ding, 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 ding.
All right. So I'm going to try and sum up. Tell me if I get this right. So point one, Start arming minority arming and training minority communities to help police themselves.
Right? Start letting minority communities arm and train themselves.
So I wasn't saying like we do it. I was suggesting like
them, phrasing reeked of paternal benevolence, and I just wanted to erase that right there.
Exactly, and again, thank you for that. Appreciate it. Yeah, I'm not.
We need some white people to train these guys what to do.
Hardly. Let these communities start arming and training themselves. Let them start policing themselves. Okay, number one. Number two, start treating mental health as a serious issue in this country and start actually enacting legislation to pursue that end. Stop blocking it, right? I think that's something we can all get on board with, right? Good with that?
Yeah.
Once again, hold up that big fucking mirror to ourselves and realize we have a culture problem that we need to start sapping this shit out of our out of the next generation. And I think we're getting there. I definitely think like our generation on down is more and more going down that path. We just need to continue and step it up. Chris, you aren't so wrong about, I think maybe down the line, looking at gun ownership from the lens. At the very least, like, I don't know about insurance, but maybe like adding in some things like getting a license to own a gun, you know, regular psych evaluations tied to it. I wouldn't be opposed to that. I think that's a measure that I think is reasonable.
But that already exists. If you dross a firearm, if you're going to get a handgun, you need to get a handgun license or you actually have to take a safety evaluation.
Yeah, but that's in California.
It depends on the state what you have to go through, but drossing, that dross system is federal, buddy.
But I want to expand it upon. Like, I want there to have to be checkups, and I want it to not just be a simple, you go in, you shoot a target, you load a gun, you unload a gun, you're done. I want a comprehensive one. I honestly, comparing it to the DMV is not even that good because I want it better than the DMV. I want a really in-depth system to make sure
But real quick, this is legality here. Again, you're talking about testing people out of a civil right. How is this different than literacy tests for voting?
Fair. Again, I'm willing to accept that. Maybe this is something that I don't know. Like, because it's such an onion with this issue. There's so many different factors in this. Like, I agree. I want both things, you know, and I think the problem is I honestly just don't know what the solution is. I don't know how to eliminate the racism from this while at the same time preventing psychos like freaking Boston Bomber and all those fucking bastards from going in, pulling out guns from wherever they can freaking find them and just blowing crowds away. Like, what's the solution? I don't know. I'm spitballing ideas here. I don't have all the solutions.
Again, the solution is to turn our already intense infrastructure into going after these mass shooters, which it already exists. Literally, and someone needs to flip a switch and shift the camera from brown to white. Yeah. And we could solve this problem.
That is a huge portion of it.
And I'm going to take a venture and guess here that those people that were turning into this were probably not expecting our takes to be like this. I'm pretty sure most people came into this thinking that we were going to be.
If they've made it through 14 episodes of us, I think they know where we stand on these issues.
Not really.
I think they know that I'm going to swing hard left and that Kay's going to come at this from a mathematical and scientific and numbers perspective. And that you're going to start taking in what everyone is saying and surmise logical conclusions. I think 14 episodes is enough to know exactly how we're going to tackle this.
I would just say I don't think the average person, and I don't know enough about our listener base to make a conclusion on this, but I'm going to guess the more average listener is not going to guess that going super far left means that you want less gun control and regulation. I'm going to guess they think it means ban all guns, ban all handguns, and get the hell out, because I've interacted with enough liberals that have said such.
Well, liberals aren't leftists. Liberals are conservatives.
True. But I've also met, again, I'm painting with broad strokes here, but like, if there's anything I've learned from interacting with people during this podcast, it's that there are plenty of people that think they're progressives that are pretty fucking center right. You know what I mean?
There's a lot of people who call themselves Christians but hate gay people. What's your point? You can label yourself anything and be wrong.
Well, but again, I'm trying to speak to everyone, and I guarantee you there is at least a handful of people that are not really progressives that are calling themselves progressives and listening to us and probably thinking, geez, these guys are pretty far out there. You know what I mean? I'm also addressing that person.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Centrists, why stand for something? So, speaking of our listener base, what's going on in that world, Matt? Anybody still listening to us?
Quite a few.
Or are we just screaming into the void?
Not at all. The opposite.
I'd be okay with both, to be honest.
Yeah. It's a good void.
Yeah. It's an echoey void. I like that.
Mm. Yeah. I like our little echo chamber. It's comforting. Makes me feel good. Makes me think good. I'm right.
Feels right. but no, opposite actually. You know, as we mentioned last episode and what we've been blasting on social media is we're trying to increase our exposure, and we put out a call to have our listeners give us some reviews on iTunes and kind of just help us boost our numbers there. And they have listened. We've gotten in just the last week, I think eight ratings. So they basically eight total where we got like four stars or better.
And if I could real quick to everyone, the reviews, the star ratings are nice. What we need is reviews. Reviews are what kick the algorithm in the pants. And if there's anything we can have you do for us, we don't need your money. We don't need your firstborn child. Just leave us reviews. It couldn't help us spread the message better.
Yep. And that's true of iTunes mainly, but also on YouTube. So if you're one of those people, please absolutely give us likes, give us reviews, give us subscribes, because that's what boosts our numbers and helps us get ahead of that algorithm. The first one is M_Oldie. Moldy?
It's Gary Oldman's wife, Michelle.
Well, thank you, Michelle. Appreciate it. Michelle says, love listening to the show. It accompanies me on my commute each week and makes me makes my drive much more enjoyable. Chris, Matt, and the Reverend Dr. K are incredibly funny, and I look forward to each episode's release. Well, thank you, Michelle. Miss Oldie, you, my dear sir or madam, are wonderful. We look forward to you listening to us every week.
All I know is somewhere there's somebody named Mark who's like, God damn it. I'm not Michelle. I'm not Gary Oldman's wife. He's a beloved American treasure of an actor. And I'm just a guy who's trying to get to my job.
It's okay, Morgan. We don't mean it.
Oh, hey, if it's Morgan, that's a good name.
The next one is Brit Bojangles 87. I like this name. I don't know why. It's hitting me right.
Bojangles.
She is actually, this is a good point to bring this out. She's a co-host on the Thanks I Hate It podcast. They have absolutely been blowing us up this week.
Their Twitter is fire. I love them.
Oh my
you guys,
God.
They're listening. You guys are fantastic.
You absolutely are. I've been meaning to listen to their episodes for a while. They've been in my queue. Finally did. And now I've actually subscribed and I'm working my way through all of their list. They're great.
Yeah, if you're still here, hit stop and go listen to Thanks, I Hate It. They're a fantastic podcast, and they're a hell of an awesome duo.
Yep, 100%. She writes, my co-host and I love this podcast. It's everything that we need to feel sane. It's clear, concise, and packed with information. Britt from Thanks, I Hate It. Britt, you are absolutely wonderful, and I cannot thank you and your co-host enough. Thank you for blowing us up, and thank you for the kind words. All right. And so the next one on the list is T. Dipple. I am Thaddeus. Thaddeus Dipple? Huh? What?
It's Greek.
Ah, gotcha.
Dipple is?
No, Thaddeus. Actually, IUS, I mean, that would be.
Yeah, probably.
Latin of some kind. I accidentally hit that. Never mind.
Anyway, our good boy Thaddeus here says, love this show, listen to a ton of shows, but this one goes to the top of my list every week, jumping over several others. Always look forward to the new episodes. Well, thank you, Thaddeus.
T. Dipple, thank you very much. T-Dipple, I appreciate you know what? It.
I'm just going to say this, official podcast update for everyone. If we see an initial, we are just going to assign a name to that initial, and we're not going to even try to guess what your actual name is. If we get it right, great. If we don't, well, that's your name now. Moving on to Facebook, we got a lot of feedback there. Two people in particular. The first one is Bill Bo. Love the name, Bill Bo. Literally B-I-L-L space B-O. Bill Bo.
That's fantastic. You know what's funny? The name's probably Bilbo, and they're like, why is he making fun of my name? Fuck Matt.
It's okay, Bilbo. I still love you.
I mean, he's probably a Lord of the Rings fan.
Awesome Tolkien references aside, Bilbo wants to know, if constitutional conservatives don't want the court to legislate, why did they approve the 2008 SCOTUS ruling stating you don't have to be a militia member to bear arms? And that the second was intended for self-defense. They can all tell you what is and is not constitutional because the document is in English. Well, what does the Second Amendment plainly state? Well, I mean, we already mentioned what the Second Amendment plainly states. I think he's asking specifically about the 2008 SCOTUS ruling that you don't have to be a militia member to bear arms. Let's see.
I would agree, because again, there's a telling comma there.
Yeah.
And that, and it's, it does not say you have the right to bear arms if you are in a militia. It is not conditional. And I get that we're arguing semantics here, and I think that the militia argument that liberals tend to use is a fair one. It's a logical argument. Like, just so for the record, even though I disagree, I don't think you're being crazy. I get it. And I think it's a valid argument. I just don't agree with it, because if the order was reversed, if it was the right to people, if the right to people to bear arms shall not be infringed if they are in a militia, if it was conditional, I would say, well, there, hands down, it's a requirement of the law. But it simply says, it's giving us a reference, like, because militias are important, the government shall not take away your right to bear arms. And again, the condition of it is less important than it grants a civil right. And I believe the only way, if you want to change that, you cannot legislate magazine sizes or take firearms away from certain people or whatever. Like, then you need to change the Second Amendment. And until you change the Second Amendment, it's part of, again, there's things about the Second Amendment I don't like, and there's things about gun control I don't necessarily like. Again, I've come out very pro-gun on this one. I'm very anti-middle-aged white guy with gun, by the way. I do think there are people who should have that right stripped away from them. I think there's a great number of people. Most of them were in D.C. a month ago. But I think there's a lot of people who should have that right stripped from them. Absolutely. But it's a civil right, and it's guaranteed in the Constitution. And again, slippery slope arguments are a logical fallacy, but they apply when it comes to civil rights and legal proceedings. These are things that require precedent. And so if we're going to say it's okay to write a bunch of bullshit loophole laws for the Second Amendment, then we're saying it's okay to write a bunch of bullshit loophole laws for any amendment. You have now set a legal precedent that you can just start violating an amendment to the Constitution. So how does that stop a fascist like Trump from nuking free speech?
I would also just add to that, I think most leftist arguments do come from logic and reason. There's validity to them. Whether they work or not is the problem. I think one of the biggest problems with the left is, while it's true that most of their arguments, gun control or pretty much any topic, do come from logical data evidence-based reasons, they just don't win. It's kind of like what I referenced before in an earlier podcast about, like, you know, Joe Rogan and, you know, political debaters like Stephen Crowder's and stuff. It's not that they're right. It's just that they know how to argue. They know how to trip people up. And that's where a lot of the leftists fall short, is they like to come at this from the idea, well, I have all the facts and I have all the evidence, therefore I'm right and I should be able to win. No, you can be right and have all the evidence and still get trounced by somebody that just knows how to out-argue you. And that ends up, that kind of why a lot of these ends up falling flat, is because the people on the right know how to not only shut down good arguments, they're also really good at using bad ones to make their base angry and vote politicians out who disagree with them.
Well, and that's why I talk about oftentimes the statistics and the numbers, yes, right?
They're not biased.
Yeah,
the numbers don't lie unless you manipulate them to do so, right? And that's why I was talking about suicides with gun laws, gun numbers, pardon.
Yeah.
You know, is they use this idea of, well, 60% of all gun deaths are by suicide. Well, yeah, no shit. That's because a lot of gun violence doesn't end in deaths.
Yeah. But to get to that point, you have to actually be able to critically think, which most people on the right can't, which is why Ben Shapiro has a career.
I think that they do know how to critically think. They just don't care about using the information except in a divisive way for whatever benefits them.
Couldn't agree more. Absolutely.
No, I agree with people like Ben Shapiro doing that. Yeah. I just don't agree with his listenership.
But his listenership, it's not that they don't know how to think. It's that they don't bother doing their own research so that they can find out the actual truth.
Yep, they want also confirmation.
It has nothing to do, it has nothing to do with intelligence.
Yep, yeah. I agree.
They want these are if you're looking at Ben Shapiro and PragerU and this kind of shit for that confirmation, it's not that you can't critically think, it's that you're just choosing not to. I can walk to the grocery store. I choose to take my car because it's a shit ton easier. And if I already have the destination in mind, which this analogy pans out, if the destination is to come to a viewpoint that I find more comfortable, whether or not it's true, I can listen to someone like Cage said. I can listen to someone like Ben Shapiro, who knows exactly what he's doing.
Yeah.
And find comfort in that.
And here's the thing. I don't disagree. I just don't think the two things are mutually exclusive. I think both things can be equally true at the same time.
Yeah, but I think, like, for instance, one of the things that Kay really brings to us, besides a beautiful beard, is numbers. It's the facts of the matter. You know, the numbers are a tool. Just like he was saying, you know, they can be manipulated, but they themselves do not lie. And again, you can take a hammer and build a house with it, or you can crack someone over the head with it. But no matter what you've done with it, it was not the hammer's fault. It is how you have wielded it.
Yeah, true.
And it's important to have those tools in our toolbox, because if you're going, you cannot critically think if you don't have the facts.
True. 100% agree. We got two more, and I'll try to wrap this up quick because we just had a big digression there, but I think it was important and needed to be happening. So the last two. First one of those two is from Gary Wetzel. So first off, I love the content. I actually wanted to bring this up last month in the spirit of Black History Month, which was the whitewashing of Black history and civil rights leaders throughout American history. Also, the whitewashing of American history in general. Columbus, the mistreatment of Native Americans, the Revolutionary War, civil rights, and beyond. It seems to be more prevalent than not where the truth is being watered down or outright ignored. Anyway, I thought this was an interesting topic to dive into.
I like this guy.
Yeah. Gary, we did not, the other two hosts here did not know about your comment beforehand. I waited till just now to tell them about this. It's just a coincidence that it also happened to coincide with Chris's point a little bit about this topic.
Yeah, Gary's going to dig my MLK, MLK watering down point. But yeah, no, Gary, you're great. I couldn't agree with you more. It is the whitewashing of history is a crime.
Yeah. And it's also leads right back into that misinformation and what changing of facts. It all connects.
And this kind of behavior goes back literally thousands of years.
Yeah.
We look at the fucking Bible. And the Bible doesn't say what was actually written 2,000 years ago, but that's not even what happened. My point is that it's not just whitewashing. It's the people in power tainting the narrative to suit their needs. Yeah,
fabricating a narrative.
Tainting, fabricating. My point is that the people in power will always rewrite history so that they are the fucking heroes.
Amen. Who else we got? You said there's one more on the pipeline.
And this is a fun one. I wanted to end on this one specifically. This is not necessarily anything of substance. As I mentioned, we're live on pretty much all social media. One of them that I absolutely should mention, if you like echo chambers, if you want a lefty version of Facebook, Liker, LIKER, absolutely a go-to. It is literally the spectrum of the left. I have seen everything from liberals to outright communists like Chris.
So it's left-wing parlor.
Pretty much.
All right, fair enough.
But again, got to go where the audience is. However, Carrie Lyons, I was posting that we were going to do shout outs and she decided on Liker. This is the first person Liker to actually interact with us. So I was decided to give her this shout out regardless. This is a rhetorical question, but I thought it was so hilarious it made me laugh because it's literally just her response to me saying, hey, does anybody have a question or comment about our show? And this was her question. Why are we thuglicans so mean, nasty, and ugly? Is it because they're not allowed to masturbate?
The answer is yes.
So the answer to your question, Carrie, is yes. We all agree the reason that rethuglicans are so mean, nasty, and ugly is because they're not allowed to masturbate.
And racism.
And racism, yes. Please, please continue to reach out and engage with us, Carrie, because all three of us agree we love this comment.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
All right, everybody. thank you for tuning in for our take on gun control. And again, this is a divisive topic, so we'll probably get a lot of comments, and we would love to hear some feedback, whether you agree or don't. Come engage with us. Come talk to us. Again, if you're hearing this, you've already got our link tree, but it's up. We're on Twitter. We're on Instagram. We're on Facebook. We're everywhere. Just hit the link tree. And we will see you next week. We love you. Until we're together again next Monday, take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. And remember, the revolution is you.